Backseat Producers, episode 189, 500 Days of Summer. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
We are the Backseat Producers.
Holla!
It's weird, because now I have to say, we are the Backseat Producers, and this is some other show, but I don't have to do that here. Because this is the Backseat Producers.
No, you don't. Good banter. Alright, so...
Next week.
City Lights. Booyah. Well, Chaplin?
Come on. Old school.
Really old school.
I brought it up too. I get points. So later, when you try and foist some other old school piece of crap on me, I'm going to pull this out of my pocket and be like, I picked City Lights. So here's the thing. I think we should do this like DKP, where like I get to bank up years. Like, so this was what made the 30s. So I want 80 points for this movie, for suggesting a movie so far back. So then you'll come back with something that was made in the 60s and be like, that looks terrible. So I'll spend 30 of my points to bring it up to the 90s. I got a whole system worked out. It's going to dwarf your puny little backseat box office bull.
You'll probably actually write a program for it,
too. No, I won't do anything with it. I want to do something with it, but I won't.
All right. So this week, 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
What'd you think? High level.
Loved it.
I thought you would.
Time travel romance.
I told you that. I told you, 500 Days of Summer, you're like, eh. I said time travel romance.
I thought it was a different movie.
Oh.
That's fair. I thought it was, there's some large, like 500 is like the first part of a different movie. 500 Candles?
I don't know.
Whatever it is a John Hughes movie, and I hate that guy.
That's 16 Candles.
There it is. Whatever.
16 Candles is...
not even close. I know it's close to something else that I did not want to see.
100 Cigarettes?
No, because that's got Christina Ricci in it.
That's true.
Whom I would have intercourse with. Just putting that on the table. Have you ever seen Black Snake Moan?
Not yet.
It's good. And she is mostly naked for like most of the movie.
That's what I've heard.
I wasn't really big into Christina Ricci until I saw that movie. And then I was like... y'all stank on my hang lows.
Daryl, what'd you think of the movie?
Kind of painful to watch.
What?
Really? Brings up too many bad memories.
Well, oh. Painful in that way.
Yes. Kind of hard to watch somebody sitting there dissecting a relationship that didn't go.
I know, that's the best part.
Yeah, it was it was uncomfortable to watch, but in a brilliant way. Mm.
It's too real.
That was my high level.
Well, that's just it. He hits all the buttons just right. And looking back through some of the production notes, it's sort of autobiographical. But I think everybody's been at some point in their lives where this guy is.
If you've ever had a relationship,
it went sour.
It goes through these. No, just in general, it goes through these stages.
Or an unrequited relationship, especially, because that's basically what this is.
Tony, I'm the object of a lot of unrequited relationships.
I know that.
Well, it's
not
also
the unrequiter. I'm the unrequited.
It's also a good metaphor for growing through your own pain. I mean, the guy sits there and beats himself pretty much to death trying to figure out what's wrong or what he did wrong, and he really didn't do anything wrong.
Except not listen.
Yeah.
That was his first and biggest mistake was that he didn't listen.
Yeah.
She told him up front, this is not going to go anywhere. you will, this will not happen.
That's a confusing
thing. But when you're infatuated with somebody, you're not listening anyway. The only thing that's... The pounding of your heart just tends to drown out everything else.
No, he heard her. He just thought it would be different anyway. He thought that she was lying to him.
He was,
and that he could convince her otherwise. And she's like, you haven't convinced me otherwise. And he's like, well, what the hell? This is on you, not me.
Yeah.
Except that it wasn't, because he was being a dick.
He's like the guy that goes and hangs out with lesbians thinking he's going to turn them.
I don't know anybody like that. I hang out with lesbians because I like to party, and lesbians like to party.
That's fair.
Like, a hardcore way. And I know that they're not going to touch me when I fall asleep, Daryl.
You never know.
I feel safe. Like, I'm not going to be raped at a lesbian party.
Well, that's good to know.
And if I am, then I turned one. And
win-win.
Win-win. Yeah.
Great story either way. I was either violated or victorious.
Definitely a different way of looking
at
it.
Wait a minute. Either you weren't violated or you were victorious.
Yeah.
All right, so acting.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is awesome.
He is awesome at being uncomfortable and needy, and
it's a fantastic way that this movie is presented fantastically, that you can put yourself in his shoes like the entire step of the way. Like, I don't want to say that he's hollow, because that gives a bad tinge to his talent and his acting in the movie, but he plays a good shell that you can insert yourself into.
Yeah.
So you can like wear him like a Joseph Gordon-Levitt suit.
Well, that's sort of the idea. I mean,
I know.
Is to allow yourself to live vicariously through the actor.
I know. And he does it. Not only does he do that well, but he also carries himself personally well. Since those two things are at odds with one another, I think that him pulling that off is a feat.
Yeah, this is not a role that... I mean, having seen him in, like, Inception, these characters are completely different.
Yes.
Because in Inception, he is capable and thoughtful and intelligent and focused and everything the character
is. Everything that the character is not.
Is not in this movie.
Acting!
Yeah. Yeah. Having previously really only known him for Third Rock,
mm-hmm.
This is... seeing him in a couple of movies like this is really showing that...
He's growing tremendously.
Well, and they actually picked a pretty decent actor as... I mean, because he was really young when he was in Third Rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he did well in that series. But
you also have to realize he was in Third Rock.
Yeah.
With some pretty impressive talent, too, because John Lithgow is a beast.
Yes.
If you have not watched the fourth season of Dexter that he is in, that guy is a monster. Like, that guy can turn it on and off. So I'm sure working with talent of that caliber honed his
skills. It had to have helped. Zoe.
Zoe.
Done.
Yeah.
She was great.
She got hotter during this movie. Like, I didn't think she was that hot before, but then after this movie, I'm like, that chick is a lot hotter. I'm going to have to redraw my top 10 list.
Yeah, I've always liked Zoe. I think she's got that quirky hotness. And she played this role very well.
I watch a lot of Bones. And so I look at her sister a lot. And I can see, like, the two of them are on screen at the same time sometimes. Not in this movie, but in Bones. It's weird.
Zoe's hotter.
Zoe's a lot hotter. Emily is very weird looking.
Yeah. They look alike, which is really hard to...
Yeah. It's like one of them
to
really
justify,
hot,
yeah.
And then one of them's kind of a chick.
Acting.
I don't think there was
thoughts on acting?
Yeah, I don't think there was anybody else in the movie.
I have no problem with them. I mean, they all did a pretty much A-game performances here.
They were well cast in their roles.
It just goes to show you when you
did a great job.
If you have good actors and a good script and a good director, it all clicks.
Yeah. So there is one point of contention that I hate I find myself coming to hate this trick in show in movies and shows. It's where they show you a little piece of action, and then they do the X days before. And this movie jumped around a lot in the time period.
Yes, it
well, did. It's supposed to.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's...
It's a nonlinear movie.
500 days of their relationship, and then it jumps from period to period, and it tells you what day they're on. So, like, they'll start on day one, and then they jump to, like, day 80, and then it's day 400 and something, and then jumps back. Right. So they break the flow of the traditional romantic comedy, because the traditional romantic comedy falls into the... We meet, we date, everything's great, something happens, we break up, everyone mopes, then we get back together. Oh, there's a rousing speech, then we get back together.
Right. Yeah.
And then we have a bunch of peripheral characters that all suck, that somehow learn a lesson throughout the movie. That's the standard romantic comedy, which did not play out in this movie.
Not at all.
This movie was a tragedy, and that was awesome.
This movie...
It's not so much a tragedy, because... I would get a little strong. It's more of a learning experience.
It's closer to a coming of age, story.
Yeah, that's essentially what the official version is.
For that character, depending on where you end the story, it's either a tragedy or a coming of age story. Mm. Because if you grow from that and move beyond it, then it becomes a coming of age story. And I do kind of feel that he comes out the other side better for this experience.
Well, yeah, because at the
beginning... But at one point, he is at rock bottom.
Well, that's sometimes you got to go there in order to start looking
up. Sure.
I mean, look at the beginning of the movie. The guy works far below his capability. I mean, he's a frustrated architect. I mean, he works at a greeting card company. I mean, that's pretty about 180 degrees opposite in creativity.
Yes.
There. And he's just more or less drifting through life in this job that he doesn't really like. But he's good at it, yeah. But he's comfortable with it, but he's not really that comfortable with it. He wants to do something else.
Hey, it's just a paycheck.
Yeah, I know, it's a paycheck.
I go through this in my own life, Daryl. Come on.
Everybody does at some point. And then he's kind of knocked out of his little comfort zone by this girl.
Yep.
And he starts the pursuit of her. But, you know, she plays what he thinks is hard to get. And what she sees is, no, I'm not interested. And we go through the long convolution, and then towards the end, after he's had his heart ripped out, stomped on a few times, he begins to say, okay, it's time to get over this and move on with life. And the whole experience is pushing him out of this zone to get him into something that he really wants to do.
So, I love romance movies. And the reason I don't love romance movies. I love romance as a plot in media in general. Make that differentiation right now. And the reason that I love romance as a plot in movies and books and whatever is that it is the fakest thing that you can put to paper or the screen. Romantic comedies, that is the height of fiction right there. Human relationships that work that way. And this movie was not that. This movie was a stark look at a realistic relationship that does not work out.
I liked this movie for the exact same reason that I liked The Breakup.
I've never seen The Breakup.
I own it. I'll let you borrow it.
Yay! What?
It is exactly what it says it is. It is a... And I don't have to spoil this because we talked about this in like episode 5.
No, I think I've seen The Breakup. But Vince Vaughn and
Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah, I've seen this.
And that is an uncomfortable movie to watch, especially the midsection when they're in like the throes of the breakup.
When she's walking around naked, yeah. And you're like, is that really her? I don't think that's really her, no. But I want it to be really her because I'm kind of naked. I've seen it. I thought we were talking about something else.
Okay. No, that movie is uncomfortable to watch at certain points, much the same as this one is. And it's mostly because... He is just so clueless at certain points that you want to you get almost the same feeling about a horror movie where you know the killer is right in the next room and the person's ready to walk into the room. You're like, don't do it. Come on. don't go there. You know this is not going to end well.
It's a situation like when you're watching The Office. You're like, oh, come on. Don't. Just leave.
Yeah.
Just leave. Don't. All right, we're talking about it.
Yeah. The good episodes of The Office.
Yeah. The old episodes of The Office. Yeah, so I dig that, like, that kind of stark look at human relationships. I dig that, although I would prefer it was an actual romance where they got together in the end.
Then she took that off would have clothes. Been too much of a cliched ending.
Well, I know. That would have betrayed the movie.
It would have betrayed the movie. It would have betrayed her character.
Although, what I would have accepted, oh man, what I would have accepted, is if they did like this parallel universe split where they get together and then both of them are like old and miserable for the rest of their lives because like he still works at the greeting card company when he's 50, then she does something that she hates, and then if they'd split and then like he went on, like they don't get together and then he goes on to do something worthwhile with his life and then he starts banging this fall chick. Autumn. That was clever.
That was good.
I didn't see that coming either. I should have seen it coming, but I didn't.
Yeah, that one was one of those really obvious things that they put in there that it was like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
And I was like, ah, damn it. It's so good, but, ah.
Not a video podcast.
No, kind of.
Well, sort of.
Kind of.
So, the plot, I mean, the plot structure is, I mean, you pretty much described it before.
Well, it's not a romantic comedy.
And it's a non-romantic
although it follows story. A lot of the same tropes. If you put the story chronologically, it follows that same pattern. They meet, they get together, they...
With the one exception of her flat out saying at the beginning of the relationship, we're not going to fall in love.
That happens all the time. The chick, like in most romantic comedies, the chick usually says, this is never going to happen. And then at the end, it happens.
Yeah, what's funny is that it is a romantic comedy if you look at her story aside from him.
It's funny.
Because
hey, she ends up happy.
she falls in love. She ends up perfectly happy and content in the relationship.
You were the starter boyfriend.
It's been a while since I've seen the movie, but...
This movie is the video personification of the stages of grief.
Yes.
That scene on the park bench is acceptance. That scene on the park bench is also fantastic.
Which scene is that?
It's where he's gotten over her, and he's working at the architectural firm.
Yeah.
And like he's on his lunch or whatever, and he's just sitting out there drawing, and then she shows up, and she's like, hey, how's it going? And like an addict, you can see him, like, the drug is, like, the heroin is right there in the needle. And he's like, yeah, let's get this going. She's like, I'm getting married. And then he's like, hey,
yeah.
Hey, eat my balls.
Yeah. I got the sense that the 500 days of their relationship weren't sequential.
What?
Like, there were gaps in the time. Like, day one and day two were not the next day. There were the days that they were with each other in the relationship. So day 500 took place after a length of time.
Day 500 is the park bench.
Right. So, like, day 499 happened before that. Like, well before that.
No.
You don't think so?
That's not how I read it at all.
So all this took place in a year and a half?
Yeah. Almost 2 years.
Okay. I just saw it in a different way.
Well, that's the impression that I got. Because they break up at like 200 and something.
Yeah, and the rest of the movie is him
trying to get over her.
Well, yeah, that's right.
And then like 6 months down the line, like, I don't know.
That's true.
They break up, and then he's like emailing her, and then she calls one night, and she's like, hey, how's it going? And he's like, hey, let's meet up.
Yeah.
Like, he's still not over. And then eventually,
I remember now.
Mid-400s, he actually gets over her and starts doing stuff. And then he meets her on 500, like right before he goes in the interview. And then at the interview, when he meets Autumn, is when it ticks over to 1.
Right. So. That's when... Is that they're both going for the job and they agree to meet for coffee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when she agrees to meet for coffee, it ticks over to 1.
Yep.
So that was clever. Because it did not give me the impression that they were going to get together. I was fine with that.
Well, they're trying to indicate this is a rebooting.
Yeah, you know what it's like. It's like the Dark Tower. No one?
Which I have not seen.
Not my penis. series of books. Scott knows.
Yeah, I know. I'm aware of the series. I just never have read it.
I'll bring you mine. I have the huge leather-bound tomes. I keep them in a safety deposit box.
You're serious about your literature, aren't you?
Just those.
Just those.
I don't actually have them in a safety deposit box. I don't actually have leather-bound tomes. In fact, I don't even own two of them. I've read them to destruction several times, so...
Good talk.
Can't discuss romantic comedies.
New rule. Wow, this
20-minute
like
episode. Go see this movie.
Wow, you are blowing out that.
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm going to try and be Michael Bolton from Lonely Island.
Michael Bolton from Office Space?
No, Michael Bolton from Lonely Island. Seen that video?
I'm like aware of it. I have not seen
Elvis
it.
Elvis from Lonely Street.
I've had it described to me, but I have not seen it.
I think we described it to you at game night.
You did, and Julie did also.
Paul is obsessed with it. He knows all the lyrics.
Oh my god.
Oh, and I listened to your Expectations episode.
Yeah. And?
And I did read the Scott Pilgrim.
I read
The first volume, because I read the collected. So I read the first volume, got halfway through the second.
You know what? I remember
like,
that.
Yeah, I was like, I got halfway through the second, and I was like, I don't even care anymore.
I don't like comics.
I like comics.
I don't like comics. I like graphic novels. I just find all of it distasteful. And I'm not talking like the big house stuff, like big house stuff like Marvel or DC. I just don't like the format.
Well, it's not a medium for everyone. It's just a delivery medium for a story.
Like, it works.
I know some people that can't stand to read.
I don't like reading. I would much prefer somebody reads to me. Oh, speaking of, did you see how I was pissing and moaning that James Marsters wasn't doing the audiobook for Ghost Story?
Yeah, and then I heard that...
goddamn Lionel Luth, John Glover's doing it. And I was like...
I like John Glover.
I got a huge booter. There are very few people on this planet I would accept to read to me as intimately as James Marsters has read to me over the past, and John Glover is one of them. If that guy was going to Dragon Con, I'd give him a handy under the table. That is not a joke. He was the best part of Smallville, hands down. Hands down.
When Michael Rosenbaum was on the show, and when he was after about the first season, he was a little rough, but
yeah,
after that,
first season sucked.
Yeah, but when Michael Rosenbaum really got going, the scenes with John Glover and Michael Rosenbaum were the best in the series. Absolutely the best in the series.
So you know what astounds me? So Katie has said this about multiple series that we've watched. Okay, so she loved the first season of Buffy, but didn't like the rest of it. She loved the first season of Smallville, but didn't like the rest of it. Because she likes the Freak of the Week thing, but doesn't like the overarching plot lines. And I was like, what?
Episodic television for decades, that was the way stories were written.
Mm-hmm. Like, that is bottle gross. Chest.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's no point.
Yeah, it was considered soap opera to write otherwise.
A 40-minute story is never good. A 40-minute story is rarely good. Let me amend that.
Well, that whole arc thing has only been kind of a feature since about the mid-90s or so.
I know.
No, there was... I mean, if you look back at, like, the primetime soaps, like...
Well, yeah,
like
in the
Dallas
soap opera.
Well, Dallas,
that's true.
And
Dallas
and Crest and all those
the
shows.
The evening, yeah.
I mean, now, granted, they weren't genre fiction. Where genre fiction was pretty much... Freak of the Week stuff.
I think you can really say that the rise of the overarching plot has mirrored the rise of on-demand media. How about that? It has become much more prevalent.
That is fair.
Because it's so much easier to go back in case you miss something.
That's one other thing too.
When they started making series available in other formats, that's when it really became prevalent. And when those stories became tighter. A lot of the soap opera stuff, even that was still a little bit episodic because you had the chance that people would miss an episode. So that they kept the stories loose enough that not a lot happened each individual episode. or there were enough characters involved in the story that, oh, if you follow this one character's story, you know, you could...
Yeah.
You don't miss any one character story too much if you miss a single episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, too, you have a generation of writers who have come along that have gotten away from the kind of like bottle show format, and they're now used to writing in a story arc. And also, the series are written towards that goal of being longer running rather than just, okay, it's 16 episodes, boom, that's the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, and a series of series that kind of illustrate how it went was look at Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, TOS was all episodic.
Mm-hmm.
Next Gen was
all episodic.
Almost all episodic.
Except with some experimental story arcs here and there.
Yeah, but those were rarities, and those were special events.
Even then,
events.
They weren't story arcs per se. They were set pieces that introduced you to a conflict in a real vague way. So if they wanted to do an episode, they could come back to that con. Like the Borg. The Borg were an obvious
plot
arc, but like, hey, we don't have anything to do this week. Let's have the Borg show up and be Borgy.
Yeah.
So,
but then you get to like DS9.
Which was painful.
I actually enjoyed DS9. That was the first Star Trek that I watched. Like, I would come back to week after week.
I really got into Voyager.
And there's also a problem with early episode.
I missed
Voyager. Early television was when they got to the point where they were showing, when they sent the episodes out, they were sometimes not shown in any order.
That's
also a problem. Although Sliders got around that pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
Sliders was awesome. Overarching plot and episodic freak of the week. Are we home? Maybe. Nope.
All right.
Voyager is what got me. See, the thing with that, though, was that at the time, Voyager was one of the few shows that were doing that so overtly. Because they're like, hey, we've been blown off into the Delta Quadrant, and we're trying to get home. Let's get home. And then that was the plot of the show.
Yeah.
And then what was cool about that was that they would travel, although the execution of the show was terrible.
Well, I wouldn't say it's terrible. It was just incredibly uneven. They'd have good episodes and crappy episodes, and then really crappy episodes, and then a whole series, a whole season that was so-so, and then one that was fairly decent. It's amazing it lasted as long as it did.
Janeway was a great captain. Chakotay was terrible. The Doctor was awesome. Seven of Nine was an unnecessary set piece to draw in geeks that for some reason worked. And I don't know who these people are that the fan service attracts, but I don't understand them. I don't understand. Okay, so yeah, she's got a big rack and she's in this tight. So you're seriously going to watch a 40-minute show of which she has maybe 15-20% screen time just to catch glimpses of her in this uniform?
There's a lot of desperate people out there.
Yeah, I know some of them. But like that's not desperate. You know what that tells me? That tells me that people don't have the self-esteem to value their own time. Like, seriously, if you want to watch titillation like that, go watch porn.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get more boobs per second. Guaranteed. Guaranteed.
Yep.
So, I don't understand the fan service thing. Unless it's about Dark Tower, because then I'm in. I watch probably anything with Dark Tower references in it. Man, I want Josh Holloway to be the gunslinger.
That's not going to happen.
I know. I want it to be, though. Javier Bardem's really going to have to work to sell me on this. He was fantastic in No Country for Old Men, but...
I don't know the character, but just from, like, the imagery I've seen of the character, I think...
It's Clint Eastwood.
Well, yeah. But I think Javier Bardem can pull off that type of character.
His eyes aren't blue.
Contact lenses.
Are you serious? You are pulling that crap?
Are you serious? First off, in the books... For the amount of text dedicated to describing his eyes, seriously, I'd say 1-2% of the book's overall text is dedicated to describing the color of his eyes.
That sounds like weird. Poor editing.
Have you ever read a Stephen King book?
That's Stephen King for you. They don't bother to edit his stuff anymore.
No, why would they? He's one of the best-selling authors of all time.
Not always for the best reason, but...
Hey, best-selling is best-selling.
That's true.
Stephen King could pee in the snow and he'd probably get a book contract.
Yeah. Yellow snow.
And a movie contract, yes. Apparently. From what we saw.
Some of those movies have been so bad. Yeah. Shawshank Redemption was so good. Like, that's the problem there.
His short stories tend to make better movies than the long form ones.
It was really just different seasons. Because Apt People was great.
I've never seen Apt People.
Apt People was great.
Yeah.
Shawshank Redemption was great. What is that?
I enjoyed
The Body was great.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read The Body, but I saw Stand
By Me. No, I'm just talking about movies now.
Oh. There was a movie, The Body?
Yeah. Stand By Me.
Stand By Me, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a great movie.
Yeah, it is a great movie. So that movie was great. Apt People was great. Shawshank Redemption was great. And then they haven't made the fourth one into a movie because they really can't.
Yeah. What is that? I don't know.
It's A Winter's Tale. So basically, it's this clandestine organization that comes around. You ever see Are You Afraid of the Dark on Nickelodeon? Where they're all around the campfire and they tell scary stories?
No, but I understand the concept.
So it's basically that. And so these people meet around this giant fireplace in the bottom of this bar. And like the fireplace mantle has carved into it is the tale, not he who tells it. And the name of the story is The Breathing Method. It's about this woman who... she gets, like, her throat cut in a mugging or something, and it's all about the last 5 minutes of her life where she's struggling to breathe on the ground. My memory of the story fades somewhat as we get to that part.
I understand.
But that, yeah.
And I actually have read some Stephen King books that I enjoyed. Like some of the ones that were made from some of the earlier movies, like I really enjoyed Carrie and Firestarter and
no, those were good books.
The Dead Zone.
Dead Zone was awesome. So was Tommyknockers.
I never read Tommyknockers.
Tommyknockers was great. It took too long to get the action though, but he does some cool weird stuff. Like he suffers from the same problem that Jim Butcher does. Like he has great concepts and imagery. But then when you get there, you're like, I want you to explore this thing more.
He can... one thing that I do appreciate about King is that he creates very interesting characters. He doesn't always do interesting things with them, but he does create some very interesting characters.
If you're looking for a guy who does both, you're looking for Jim Butcher.
Yeah. I'm waiting for some of his books to go a little bit cheaper on the ebook thing because I will probably read some more of them.
Start with Codex Alera. I want more people to read it so I can talk about it.
You said that is better than...
It's better than Dresden. It's also complete.
Well, there is that.
Yes, there's something to be said. That is a rare commodity.
I'm currently rereading The Incarnations of Immortality.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds very sexual.
Mostly.
That's what I call
Piers Anthony.
My penis. Mm.
It's the conceit is that in the modern world of the 1990s, when this was written in the 80s, magic is real. Magic and science coexist. You can go to a magic shop and buy magic stones and potions and things like that. And the five incarnation there are five conceptual incarnations that are immortals that just happen to be real. Death, war,
famine.
No.
Plague.
No. It's death, war, fate, time, and...
Wiener. Love.
Life.
Oh.
It's the book is Being a Green Mother, and I think it's life. Because it's on a pale horse with a tangled skein, wielding a red sword, bearing an hourglass, and being a green mother. So he wrote those five books about each of the incarnations, and the setup is that each of those incarnations can be replaced by a human. And it's just a job. Now, when you are doing that job, you are immortal. And each job has a way that it can be replaced. If for some period there is ever a period without war, then war can be replaced. The persona can be replaced with someone else. Someone can kill death and take over the position. So the first book is on a pale horse and starts with this guy who's about to commit suicide, and he's like, he's got the gun to his head. Death comes in to collect his soul, and he shoots Death in the head, and Death dies. So he takes over as Death. And so he wrote the five books, and they were so popular, and he had only ever planned on writing five that he was like, okay. So then he writes a book about God and Satan, that they get replaced. And that those books were finished like in the 80s. Come to find out, in the late 90s, there was another book written that I was not aware of, and it's the incarnation there is Night. So, so I'm rereading the seven to get to that eighth one that I haven't read yet.
The Codex Alera thing is everybody has magic.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's essentially Pokemon, though. Every element, fire, earth, water, air, and metal, all of them have these little beings in them called Furies,
mm-hmm.
which allows you to manipulate them. So, like, as your citizenry, like the First Lord or whatever has all of those powers at his disposal, and then as you go down, people's skill and power with those lessen.
Gotcha.
So, like, most people only have one or two, one or one.
So it's a it's like a class system based on what you can do.
Yeah, it's immersive, but
very few people can master all five.
Yeah, yeah, it's clever. It's very clever, and he said that he wrote it on a dare that he could not write a compelling story based on Pokemon.
Whoa.
If I had heard that before I started reading it, I would have been like, that's gay, I'm never reading that. But then I read it, and then I read that, I'm like, that is awesome. Because it is so immersive.
Hmm. I will have to check that one out. Alright. I don't have much else to talk about.
Me neither.
We've doubled the length of the episode. Wait. Talking about other crap.
Yeah, easy edit.
Alright, next week, City Lights.
Charlie Chaplin's seminal work.
It's what?
Seminal work.
Seminal?
Seminal, excuse me.
That's right, a I'm funny
here.
Word.
Okay.
Yeah, bye. It's rude as obviously.
Obviously. All right, see ya.